is All Things Peoria. I'm Daniel Musisi. As vaccines become available to people of all ages, parents have more questions. WCBU student reporter Olivia Streeter talks with Barb Johnston, a nurse practitioner at Unity Point, about some of the questions parents might have.
Well, unless people have been living under a rock, I think they're aware of this crazy virus called COVID-19 that's pretty much taken the world over in the past year and a half. And for a long time, we all lived in a lot of fear. And now currently there is vaccines and they've been available for adults for quite a while. And then we expanded them earlier this year for children ages 12 to 18. And I think that's made a big difference in both parents and children's ability to attend school in person, not to attend school, but their comfort level of having children be in school. And I anticipate that the 5 to 11-year-olds, this would help those parents be a lot more comfortable sending their children to school as well. It's been found 95% effective so far in the clinical trials, which is a huge relief to parents and a huge relief to us in the pediatric world as well, because it's been scary not being able to have anything to protect these children with other than wearing masks and social distancing and all the things we already know. And while this does not eliminate the need to do those things, it does make you feel a little safer when your child is out there being a kid and doing what kids do. And maybe while you have told them and we tell them and everybody knows the importance of good hand washing and everything, sometimes 5 to 11-year-olds don't always remember to do that. And this, I think, makes us feel a lot more comfortable about them out there doing the things that it's really important for them to do and to be. Well, the studies have shown that because they have healthier immune systems than us old people, they've tolerated the vaccine so far a lot better than the adults have. They've had much less evidence of side effects. They've had much less problems with the vaccine, and they've done a lot better than a lot of us older, bigger people have done with the amount of side effects. They have had a sore arm, but that's basically it.
So what are some possible side effects that parents should look for, and how to know if they are serious side effects that need to be looked at or treated?
Well, I think the normal side effects are, you know, sore arm, maybe a little fatigue, sometimes a low-grade fever. Low-grade is considered like 100.4. It's considered fever, so anywhere around the 100 range. Now, if they would have a high fever, like 103, 104, I think that would be something that to be concerned about. Anytime anybody has any difficulty breathing or significant swelling, not just of the arm, because you can have some swelling around any shot, but if it gets very red or hot and hard and really large, I think that should be checked out. Anytime anybody's having trouble breathing, which is considered like an anaphylactic response, they should be seen immediately in the emergency room. That's not something you would want to mess around with. But that's pretty rare. Anytime anybody would have any allergies to any of the ingredients of the vaccine, that would be a contraindication. The nice thing with the Pfizer vaccine is that it's not made in the traditional way, like a lot of people in the past with egg allergies had to be careful about certain vaccines. That's not an issue with the Pfizer vaccine, because that's not how it's created. So that it would be really any allergies to any of the ingredients. I would just say that any parent who has questions about whether their child, if there's a reason that they should, for some reason, should not get this vaccine, they should talk to their pediatrician or their provider. If you want to get this started now before the holidays, because as we all know, especially because a lot of us haven't been able to do this for over a year, people are getting together with families that they haven't seen for a long time. You know, you're going to be seeing older patients, older people, grandparents, great-grandparents, aunts, uncles, what have you, that may be immune compromised, that may have not gotten the vaccine or have gotten it, but it's not fully effective with them because they have immune problems. And it's, you know, it's very dangerous to older people. I think we've learned it's really dangerous to people who have immune problems. So the last thing you'd want is to have your child, who's probably going to do well. Most kids do fine if they get COVID and they have no problems, but you bring that home to, or you share that with grandparents or babies under, you know, 2 and under, who also don't have any, there's no vaccine available for them yet. So you have all these populations that are kind of at risk. And when you're having people get together, the last thing you'd want to have is your child expose somebody unknowingly to something that could harm them, make them very sick, or perhaps even cause their death.
That's Barb Johnston speaking with WCBU's Olivia Streeter about vaccinations for young people. For more vaccine info, visit WCBU.org. This is All Things Peoria. I'm Daniel Musisi. And in about 6 minutes, Tim Shelley speaks with Heart of Illinois ABC anchor Janice Rebholz about local journalism.
The NPR One app is public radio made personal. The newly redesigned app now includes both audio and text stories from NPR, so you can read or listen on your own schedule. You can also hear WCBU's best stories and podcasts. Learn more at wcbu.org/NPR1.
This is All Things Peoria. I'm Daniel Musisi. With this year's passage of the Climate and Equitable Jobs Act, owners of coal-burning power plants have new incentives to convert into solar and battery storage facilities. Vistra Energy plans to do just that at several of its Illinois power stations, including the E.D. Edwards plant in Bartonville and the former Duck Creek plant in Canton. Tim Shelley broke down the bill's battery angle with Clean Grid Alliance regional policy manager Sean Brady.
There's a clean coal and energy storage provision that allows existing owners of coal plants to shut down their coal plants and then build solar with battery storage, or just battery storage at that facility. Those facilities would be brought online in the next, between 2023 and 2026. About 300 megawatts of solar and 150 megawatts of battery storage. So that's one thing that is happening. And then there's another aspect that looks at Illinois. It's a planning process that the Illinois Commerce Commission engages in, where they will develop a report by the middle of next year laying out needs or what energy storage can do to benefit Illinois, and recommend legislation or actions the state can take to facilitate energy storage development in the state over the next 10 years.
I should back up here for a second. If we can talk a little bit about what battery storage actually is. When the sun is not shining or the wind is not blowing, this is where the power is stored that kind of powers the grid, so to speak, right?
Yes. So Illinois is pretty much looking at just battery storage, which you're talking about right now. The battery storage industry is really in a, barring COVID, is really in a growth period for technology development. Right now we're focused on using lithium batteries, basically the size of a shipping container. But there is a lot of technology, a lot of investigation and research into developing technology so that batteries can last longer and produce more power, so that battery storage can help us generate electricity through the night. Ideally, it would be to use renewable, you know, for our organization, Clean Grid Alliance, ideally we would like to see renewables generate electricity that's then stored in battery storage and then used during the evenings, as well as during times when there is the need for ramping, you know, to match up with the variability of wind and solar facilities. So there's a number of things that battery storage can do, and we're just looking at technology. We're at the cusp of technology really growing the potential for battery storage over the next 10 to 15 years.
You mentioned with the CEJA specifically, the coal plants are getting some money to maybe convert their facilities to clean energy usage, including maybe this battery storage. Can you tell me a little bit more about how that works?
There are a number of coal plants that the bill sets kind of guidelines or criteria for the coal plant, the locations where these plants, the solar plus storage or just battery storage by itself, could be built. And those projects would be built and facilitated, or they would be financed basically through the state's RPS, Renewable Portfolio Standard. Those projects would submit an application to the Illinois Power Agency, and the Illinois Power Agency would select which ones would be awarded. So that's one aspect. And then there's another one, that there's a grant that helps build battery storage facilities. And that grant program is managed through the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity. They have $280 million to put towards three storage facilities that would be of at least 37, three storage facilities in MISO and two storage facilities in northern Illinois in the ComEd footprint. And those storage facilities have to be 37 megawatts in size. That would be managed also through an application process through the DCEO. So we've got two programs to foster development of about 10 to 12 solar and battery storage sites here in Illinois.
That's Clean Grid Alliance's Sean Brady speaking with Tim Shelley about solar and battery storage incentives for coal power plants in Illinois' new energy legislation.
Months after a simmering conflict turned into war, Hamas and Israel may be on the path to a longer-term peace.
What I can tell you is that it's definitely not rumors. Something is cooking, something is in the process.
But can Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett hold his governing coalition together long enough to pass a new peace deal? On the next morning edition from NPR News.
I'm Ariel Jones. Listen weekdays from 4 till 9 a.m. on 89.9 WCBU and WCBU.org.
This is All Things Peoria. I'm Daniel Musisi. The days of hometown born and raised journalists in markets the size of Peoria are fading away fast. Heart of Illinois ABC's Janice Rebholz is a Germantown Hills native. She talks with Tim Shelley about what it's like reporting where she grew up and about what the industry can do to retain more local talent.
I always tell everybody that I am a townie to my core. And if you need to know anything about the Peoria area, I'm your girl. But born and raised in Metamora, I originally went to Western Illinois University for broadcast journalism, quickly learned that Western just wasn't the place for me, and then I transferred to Bradley, where my original major was actually sports communication. I really thought I wanted to be in play-by-play. I thought I wanted to be a sports broadcaster, and it was a great experience learning all these things. I think I was the first class to graduate with the Charlie Steiner School. And I quickly learned that as much as I love sports, it just wasn't my niche. And when I was interning, I was actually interning at WMBD with the sports department. Kurt Pegler was great, but I was quickly noticing myself gravitate towards the reporters and what the news team was doing. And I was kind of like listening into them and seeing what they were up to. And I was like, you know what, maybe you want to make the switch. So then I did an internship over at HOI and 25 News. And then I was like, yep, I think news is where I want to be.
All right, so news. And it's funny you mentioned Charlie Steiner. I want to say I actually graduated like right before that opened.
Okay,
so,
yeah.
Gosh, what kind of background did you get there? I mean, obviously it's very built up, and some of that is transferable to the news side.
Absolutely. It's hard to say. So I think he officially took over the School of Sports Communication when I was a junior or a senior. But what was really cool is some of the people that he brought in. Of course, I got to meet Larry King, which is amazing. But they also got to bring other people and just kind of talk about their stories of where they started and worked their way up. Because I feel like that's super intimidating when you're a college student. You're like, I want to do this, but how the heck do I get there?
Yeah.
And it was reassuring, and they just said, sometimes you have to take a job you don't necessarily want to get your foot in the door. And that's kind of what I had to do. I originally took a position as a special programs producer at HOI. And while I really enjoyed that job, it's not something I wanted to do long term. And it worked out in my favor that I was able to climb up the ladder very quickly. And it was a great first step. But if it wasn't for some of those big dogs coming to Bradley saying, hey, sometimes you got to take a job you don't want just to get a foot in the door, I don't know if I would have taken that leap. I actually almost took a job in St. Louis in marketing, and I'm so glad I didn't.
Yeah. So what's it like actually working at home? Not a lot of anchors on TV can say I work in my hometown, basically.
Yeah, there's very few of us, even in the reporter side these days. I have a slight advantage of I kind of know what's going on because I hear from my friends, my family. Almost all of my family is here, so that's great. They send me story ideas and things like that. You know, walking around the grocery store, whether I'm at the gym, people hand me important topics that they trust me to tell, stories to tell. And it's great because I feel like I have a very personal connection to the stories that I tell and the people that hear them. And I get feedback constantly, which is good for the station. It's good for my personal growth and moving forward with stories that are important. So yeah, being local has a tremendous impact on local news, but there's not a lot of us left. And I hope that, you know, in the future that we do retain some local people because they truly just have a connection that you can't build unless you've grown up here.
Yeah.
I've seen people at the store and I'm like, they're like, oh, you know, I don't remember. I don't know if you remember me, but I was, say, your fifth grade teacher. And I was like, of course I remember you. And then they give me a story idea. And I'm like, that's absolutely right. Let's cover this. That's important information.
It's a connection, really, that you can't. Well, I guess if you're in a community long enough, you can cultivate connections like that, but you kind of have the advantage of I know where I am and I know people and I know places.
Absolutely. Even when I was on maternity leave, I would see stories and I would know exactly who to call and I would just make sure to give that information to the people I needed to because it was readily available to me. And even doing stories about my high school, Metamora High School, I knew who to call. They're like, oh, who do we call? I'm like, well, here is your principal. Here's your superintendent. These are the people that we need to call. And it's one of those things, they'll see my personal number. And yeah, it's one of those things that you can't necessarily build over time. I have connections from when I was in preschool.
Yeah.
So you know, just one of the advantages of being local.
And now you're on the anchor desk on HOI. I think to step back for a second, that's an experience most people will never have, to go on TV and have thousands of people watch you every night. It's just, I don't know. How do you do that?
How do I do that? That's a tough question. I will say it's very special to be on a station that I grew up watching. And it's very special to be working alongside a few of the people that I grew up watching. It's sometimes surreal, like Chuck Collins, you know, working in the same building as Chuck. I grew up listening to him talk. When Gina Morse was on television, not only did I watch her on television, I took a class at Bradley under her. And then one day I was anchoring the noon broadcast with her, which was incredible. So it's not something I guess I expected years ago because I thought I always wanted to be in sports, but it's awesome. It's so fun. I really enjoy my career. There's days that it's very challenging, especially with the family dynamic these days, but it's so cool. And I appreciate that people tune in and want to hear what I have to say about what's going on, that people trust me enough to share that information.
So going back, I guess, to something we were talking about a little bit earlier, how do we cultivate the next generation of journalists, you know, especially if they're here from Peoria or even if they're just Tenon Bradley or whatever, to really, what advice do you have for them? What guidance?
Put yourself into the community as much as you can. And if we want local journalists to stay local, I think we have to explain the importance of journalism and really explain why we need it. I feel like sometimes the purpose of journalism gets a little mixed up in the times between politics and COVID-19 and all those crazy things. Reminding people, especially people who like to write, people who like to tell stories, people who like to talk, the importance of journalism and why we do it. And I think we can keep talented people here if we explain the advantages of being local. I feel like growing up, there's this pressure to go somewhere. There's this pressure to move across the country, and people should definitely do that. But there are some people that would greatly benefit from staying around where they grew up. I still travel. I still go places. I've been to Canada, Mexico, New York. I've been all kinds of places. But this is my home, and it's very comfortable. But I'm still learning new things all the time about the area. It's not a consistent for me. So, I think telling people the advantages of being here, and I think there is, in this industry, there is incentive to go to bigger cities, a lot of that for money. Mm-hmm. You know, you can make better money in bigger cities, but you can grow here as well. And I hope people can see that. I just think it needs to be talked about more. I think talking about money is such a taboo thing, but let's talk about money. I think it has to be done. And I think that's just a few ways that we can keep talented people here locally.
That's HOI ABC anchor Janice Rebholz talking with WCBU's Tim Shelley about her story and local journalism. Thanks for choosing All Things Peoria on WCBU. I'm Daniel Musisi. We had story help today from Olivia Streeter and Tim Shelley. You can find all of today's stories at WCBU.org. That's also where you'll find links to subscribe to the All Things Peoria podcast on Apple, Spotify, Google, or NPR One. And we want to know what you think of the show, so comment on our Facebook page. We're Peoria Public Radio. Or follow us on Twitter at WCBU Radio. This is WCBU Peoria, 89.9 FM, and WCBU.org, a public service of Bradley University and Illinois State University.